Now, in the world of zoology, some things are trickier than others to study, such as the energy consumption of an orangutan swinging through the trees, for example. But Roehampton University's Lewis Halsey has solved the problem in an ingenious way by engaging some human orangs to help him, as he explains to Connie Allbag.
I had a sort of an epiphany. I think it was about 2009. I was at the Society for Experimental Biology annual conference. Dr. Susanna Thorpe at the University of Birmingham was talking about locomotion in arboreal primates. She mentioned that there's very limited information on the energy costs for arboreal primates to move around in an energetically challenging environment. I thought, well, why don't we measure energy expenditure in human beings moving around and kind of get them to do things that are ape-like? And that could be a first insightful step into this murky world of the energetics of arboreal primates.
Arboreal primates. Those are the types that spend some or most of their time in the trees, swinging from the branches. And Lewis had some new exciting kit that could measure oxygen consumption for a mask whilst not impeding movement. But humans and apes, they seem quite different to me.
There's always going to be a limit to how much you can infer about a specific species from a referential model. The trade-off is this: to try and gain an understanding of the energetic costs experienced by these animals in the wild directly is almost impossible. It's very, very hard to even see an orangutan in the wild, let alone capture or restrain or whatever an orangutan and then put equipment on it. That's never going to happen. The natural first step towards gaining some sort of insight into the energetics of their movements up in the trees is to work with a tractable model. Very obviously the most tractable model for this situation is a human being, and that's why I turn to our own species, if you like, to try and get some insight into these wonderful arboreal animals.
So what sort of people would you use to simulate them? Well, parkour athletes, of course.
They're basically street gymnasts who like to use typically the urban environment to move around with, and they'll practice and practice and practice moving around certain routes within their environment, within their urban habitat. It's acrobatic and very impressive to watch. It's quite a new sport, right? But it's fairly hip and happening, as it were. And so we thought, well, these would be the people that could best emulate a tree-dwelling primate.
I like the idea of anyone that actually practices parkour listening to us trying to talk about it in a hip and happening way.
Indeed.
Potentially cringing.
Yes. My apologies to all those parkour athletes out there.
So what were you getting these guys to do? What were they doing to mimic apes?
We created several scenarios that were sort of simulating a forest environment. Didn't look like a forest, but it created situations somewhat akin to what arboreal primates will face, and then we were able to measure the energy expenditure of these parkour athletes.
Pole swinging, rope climbing, high-level jumps. Lewis and his team created a veritable assault course for the athletes, with the idea that these are big apes on sparse diets, and they are probably looking to use as little energy as possible.
They're moving through the trees, and they come to a gap in the canopy, and basically they've got three options. One is to jump the gap. Another one is to sway the tree they're on and bend it across the gap. And the third one, which is the most simplest in a sense, is to climb down the tree they're on, walk across the canopy floor and climb up the next tree. And what we found was that something like an order of magnitude more energy for them to climb down a tree, walk across the forest floor and climb up the next tree than if they find some way to bridge that gap staying up in the trees. We can infer from that they're not going to want to lose height unless they've got to.
Well, sure. I'd rather take the path of least resistance too. But where does this sort of information fit into the bigger picture?
We need to go further now in looking at how an arboreal ape's total daily energy budget is split between its background costs, you know, just to exist, and its costs to move, the costs to digest its food. And then we can have a better idea about how their environments affect their energy expenditure, which of course drives how much food they need to eat. And then in turn, we can have an idea about how they're changing environments. So either indirectly due to climate change or more directly due to tree felling, how environmental change will affect their energy costs. And so it's likely there is a break point in terms of how much more energy they can be expending, for example, going up and down trees because the gaps in the tree canopy have become bigger, or the only trees around are too small to climb across easily, that there's not going to be enough fruits available to service that energy cost. Where that point is, I certainly couldn't say, but I think it's reasonable to suggest that it may not be too far off.
Well, let's hope there is still time for the animals. That was Lewis Halsey, and his paper was published in the Royal Society Journal, Biology Letters. A couple of you are getting in touch on Twitter, at Naked Scientist, to talk about your phobias and your experiences of them. Ed Wilson has said when he was young he had an aversion, but it wasn't quite a phobia, to the feel of certain fabrics and had a horror of feeling them on his teeth. Why were you eating fabric, Ed? Not sure about that. Susan Gray said she saw a client once who had a similar aversion to the yellow material that dusters are made from. Strange, isn't it?